We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Best Best Ball Podcast. My name is Colin Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at OverToMartin. A little bit of a crossover here as we get ready to finish out the draft I did with Sean Siegel. We're doing our RotoViz overtime draft. We'll be talking about this hopefully as the season goes on. Of course, if the team is plummeting to the depths of despair, we won't be talking through how it's doing, but hopefully with the drafts we do now over the next 2 months or so, we'll have some very successful lineups going into those latter weeks of the season. That is the goal. So we will be touching on those from time to time. But Sean joined me for this draft. It was a lot of fun. We did have some areas where we didn't fully probably agree on, but that's something that I like about our show. It's not always just that we're agreeing with each other 100% on all different elements. And I learn obviously a lot from talking through that process with Sean on each and every Road of His Overtime podcast we do, but it's always fun doing that live on the clock, as you'll have heard through those first three editions of this kind of draft that have come out over the last week or so. But on today's one, we're going to be doing a little bit of a recap, see what we could change if we, you know, if we had a magic wand, see what maybe would be a little bit different versus, you know, picking at the start of the rounds versus the end of the rounds and so on and so forth. So I'm going to go straight into the recap and hopefully you're going to enjoy this. I'll be back on the other side to close things out. Let's get into the conversation. Sean, we can take a deep breath now. That was pretty rapid, picking at the turn there, trying to get those picks in. I was happy when I seen we were picking at spot 11, but I think if you're doing these recorded drafts, maybe spot 6 is a nice landing spot to give you that time between picks. But we got there in the end, and looking at the draft board now, I had a quick look through some of the other teams, and I liked the look of how things ended up here for us. What's your kind of instant reaction to how things went there?
Yeah, I was also excited to get a pick toward the end because I have been, you know, toward the middle, have some Waller, have some Tyreek Hill. Hill was obviously not going to get to us regardless probably, but he was picked number three overall.
Hill went at spot 3 in this draft.
He did. And I think that's closer to where his value should be. Ben and I also talked a little bit about running backs and running back profiles and the direction the NFL is going. I'm probably going to have some content in the near future about the rise of the Uber back and if it was a little bit more of a historical fluke, if we're actually going to see this continue. I really feel like Christian McCaffrey right now is the only back that we can convincingly say is worthy of a first round pick. And I know that a lot of people are going to push back against that, but you look what Dalvin Cook did last year and everything was almost perfect for him. You look at Derrick Henry, definitely perfect for him. Maybe with the exception of that snow game against your Packers, you look at Alvin Kamara and the situation really does change. If you lose Drew Brees, you know, all we have to do is look at Phillip Rivers and the relationship that he has with his running backs, with the dump off passes. It's going to be a different ball game for him and for that Saints offense. Jonathan Taylor, you know, we love, but he's got the week 14 bye. And then there are some questions. I mean, you were mentioning Carson Wentz, a potential bounce back player of the year. I wouldn't discount that possibility. And we've seen him play too well in the past. He'll likely get better coaching. He'll be behind a better offensive line. But anytime an NFL player has played as poorly as he's played for as long as he's played, then I have some real concerns. And so I think that Indianapolis may not be as favorable as we think that it is, but especially when you're talking about a first rounder, that week 14 bye is a deal breaker here. You look at Elliott falling, that's an interesting spot for him to fall to in 9. You look at Austin Ekeler at 10. Ekeler in some ways could be the next Alvin Kamara. And so I wouldn't discount that as a first round pick, but when you're looking at someone who historically has created the vast amount of his production through the air, I like these receiving backs when they're less expensive. And so, you know, I don't remotely think that like Tarik Cohen is going to score the same number of points as Austin Ekeler, but you look at their trajectories, you look at their values over their careers, the right guy to buy was always the one who was less expensive, right? Now, that doesn't necessarily encounter or take into consideration last year fully because Cohen gets hurt, but you know, I just don't like to pay that first round pick for someone who isn't a 10 expected points as a rusher, 10 expected points as a receiver. So then we get to our pick with Saquon Barkley, and we know that he's falling to this point because there are concerns about his ability to play a full 17 games, his ability to be ready for week one. Just even if he is ready for week one, is he that same guy that he was a couple of seasons ago as a rookie when he puts up the monster 300 plus point season? But I think you have to take a little bit of the risk that he is, you know, if you're going to take a running back in the first round. He's probably the riskiest pick in the first round, but he's also the only one other than McCaffrey that I think has the, you know, more than sort of a long shot chance to be the really to be the guy who pays off, right? And these other guys, you can see a scenario for Barkley. All he has to do is be healthy, really. And then he's that guy. So, you know, maybe health is more important than all of those other things, but we decided to take the plunge there. Maybe he gets even cheaper, right? If it becomes clear that he's not going to be ready for the start of the season, but I like taking that risk. And then it's interesting, Antonio Gibson, someone who continues to rise. He might also be the only other guy. And it feels weird when you're talking about someone who, you know, a month ago is available at the round 2-3 turn to be saying, well, he's the only other person who really is worthy of that first round pick. But Gibson, Clyde Edwards-Helaire at the 1-2 turn with the 12th and 13th overall picks, I think that's sneaky brilliant as opposed to something that should be criticized for the reach.
Yeah, I think, you know, the upside for both of those guys to hit is huge. What I would have probably done then with that team in particular, I probably would have passed when Hunt was the selection for them. I probably would have passed there, but really strong team overall for Team 12. And it was pretty, there's a bit of a, it was a quick turnaround each time making those picks. So put a little bit of pressure on us as well, making those selections. But at the time on the clock, I would have been happy to take Diggs at the 11th spot and to have Barkley there. And then get Diggs as well. And the second round, I think, sets that up really nicely. Went in then with Hawkinson, then Etienne, then Ayuk, then Fant, then Boyd, then Gesicki, then Marquise Brown. I think we have quite a bit of upside there, I think, when we're looking through those picks. I think you often talk about players who, if you drafted in week 6 or week 7, where would those guys be? I think there's some of those tight ends, I think, particularly in the FFPC format, could creep up quite a bit. I like kind of the upside of those guys. A lot of youth as well, I suppose. So the opportunity for them to take that step forward is there, probably outside of Boyd, who we know is going undervalued again this year.
Yeah, and the question that I would ask you, because we always want to look at the draft and try and figure out if it had played out just slightly differently, what would we have done? How would we have adjusted? And so in this particular draft, there don't appear to be a lot of great tight end values after the 8th round, in part because we took 3 early and in part because the team drafting out of the 3rd slot also took 3 in a row with Logan Thomas, Tyler Higbee, and Irv Smith in rounds 6, 7, and 8. One of the things that we discussed, and I think that it did make sense, and I think that if we had been willing to risk Boyd or if Gesicki hadn't been the pick at the 802 to where it didn't really matter that much if Judy came back around, then the smart play would have been to select Judy and then hope for Boyd to come back around, as you mentioned at the time, much more likely. If we had gone that direction and it had been Judy, Boyd, how would we have addressed that third tight end? Would you have wanted to, having taken Hockenson and Fant early?
I would have still wanted a third tight end, but it would have been, you know, if you look at the guys after that, then there's a lot of uncertainty. You know, there is, you know, if we get into the 12th round, there's guys there like Ertz, you know, who still needs to be cut and then move teams, but he could be interesting, you know, especially if he ended up in somewhere like Buffalo, for example. I do think Gronk is going a little bit undervalued. I'm not really trying to get much of him, but I think he probably should be going how he finished last season a little bit higher. Obviously, up in the air with the situation of tight end and the depth chart still with the Buccaneers. But the other player going in that range that I'm quite interested in is Cole Kmet. I think he's kind of an interesting play. But I do think once you get past kind of that Gesicki range, you get into Troutman and Tonyan, you know, if you're stuck, I still think you could go with Robert Tonyan. But I think the way we ended up playing it worked out for us. I think if we had got Boyd and Judy, we would be maybe a little bit happier with our wide receivers. But I think where we took Brown, we probably would have made a reach on another tight end. If we look at who we had after that, then we went to Lawrence. So I think at the time it wasn't what we were hoping for, but I think it probably played out, Sean, a little bit better for us. The one thing you mentioned about making adjustments, the one thing with this draft was there was quite a number of times where we were hoping for a player to come to us at that pick, and a number of times one or two picks before we missed out on them. So that made us kind of change very quick. So I feel that we probably had some worst case scenario things during the draft, which made us adapt. So I think if I was looking, the things I probably would have done differently would be have the, you know, the guys drafting one or two picks ahead of us not pick our guys, but that's not really possible. So I think for how some of those players went ahead of when we were hoping to get them, you know, I would have liked to get Rondell Moore that time, but I think taking Daniel Jones now gives us that upside. So the ones that we missed out on actually, I think, have helped with the build.
Yeah, and we know that that's going to happen, that players are going to go ahead of us there. If we select Moore and we pick Daniel Jones as he comes back around, then instead of having Philip Lindsay, we have to address that a little bit later. Perhaps that's not a big deal because we did have running backs in the last round we were interested in. But I like the way that it went. I just think that Gesicki as the tight end there in the eighth round is just a no-brainer pick. I think that he's a mid-seventh round kind of guy. I know that his ADP is a little bit lower than that, but when you have a shot to get him, I think that you just have to gobble him up there. And the Boyd versus Judy selection for me comes down a little bit to making sure that in drafts where I don't get Higgins, I want to have Boyd. And so we're able to balance that out. Brandon Ayuk might be the only player where there's a little bit of a concern for me in terms of how that offense is going to run. At the same time, if not for the possibility that he'll labor through a developmental season for Trey Lance, I mean, Brandon Ayuk is someone who could legitimately go where CeeDee Lamb is going. And so you're getting a full two-round discount on that. So from that perspective, again, you're just getting a lot of value.
Hey, RotoViz Radio listener, this is Curtis Patrick from the Dynasty Command Center podcast, and I've got a special deal for you today. Go to rotoviz.com, click the subscribe button, put the 12-month subscription in your cart, and use promo code RVRadio2021. That's RVRadio2021, and you're going to save 10%. Taking advantage of this deal, getting your hands on what's included in the package, is the best way to enhance your performance this year. So go to rotoviz.com and subscribe now.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If I was picking this and I could just put the players exactly where I wanted to have them, I think I would probably swap out, I would have swapped out Lamb for Hockenson. Lamb would one pick ahead of Hockenson. And then I would have taken, well, we might, the person picking 12th took Amari Cooper and Mark Andrews. So we would either got Mark Andrews or Hockenson. We also looked there at possibly taking the two tight ends if Andrews got back to us, which would have been interesting. I think if that would have happened, we would have then obviously had an option in those two picks for Fant and Gesicki. But if we look at what went in that range, I don't think that we would have really benefited that much based on how it played out. And I think having Edie in there has also boosted the overall roster. So yeah, the Ayuk one, ideally we would have got T. Higgins, who went four picks ahead. And look, if Lamar Jackson hadn't went off the board, we would have taken him, which would then would have freed us up a little bit then, you know, later at the quarterback position. But I'm pretty happy with how those quarterbacks worked out. We were one or two picks away from having kind of some dream scenarios. You know, if we had got Rondell Moore over Daniel Jones and we got Lamar Jackson over Brandon Ayuk, I think, like, you know, I would take the 2v2 that we didn't get. But I think overall pretty strong. You know, it'll be interesting to see how the draft boards change throughout the offseason, but I'm pretty happy with it. Looking around, there's a couple of teams with quite weak tight end positions, I guess we would say. When we look at it, like, say, for example, Sean, team two, I know we're looking at our team, but for me, if you get Kelce as your tight end at the second spot, and then you hold off to the 16th, 17th round to get Mo Alie-Cox and Jordan Akins, like, I think the benefit of taking Kelce there is to really try and double down on the tight end position. Would you, you know, is that the way you would look at it as well, or would you be happy to hold off that long and hope to just run the season with Kelce?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the values of Kelce is that he gives you multiple shots to really hit a tight end who is going to score a ton. And we know that when you put several of these elite tight ends together, then your team becomes almost unstoppable. And so I like taking more of them. The issue, I think, for that team, which is one that drafters do run into if they have a pick in the top half, is where is he going to actually take that pick? Because, you know, Pitts goes ahead of him in round three, which, I mean, I'm as optimistic as the next person on Pitts, but that really prices in almost all of the potential value there. Then you have Hockenson and Andrews going before he would pick in round four. You have Goddard and Logan Thomas going before he would pick in round six. Higbee in round seven, you know, with the...
You're having to reach, yeah. You're really,
well, the weapons reach that the Rams have and even the potential backup tight end that they have, it's difficult to see Higbee as a guy who really has gone through a very minimal stretch of fantasy relevance in his career. It's difficult to see him paying off at that position, even with a huge upgrade at quarterback. That's not to say that it's impossible, because we have seen him have a good stretch. And really, for all of these players, or for players drafted in the first, say, 13 rounds, you can see a fairly straightforward scenario in which they would do well. But, you know, for those guys in the first 13 rounds, draft the guy in round 13 as opposed to the guy in round 7. Now, you know, that is around the range that Higbee tends to go. So I'm a little bit in the minority there. But then Gesicki obviously goes before his round 8th pick, as does Smith. Evan Engram, someone who now, in addition to demonstrating some skill deficiencies, is more surrounded by other weapons. And so, you know, can he get the volume? you know, and then you're already into the Adam Trautman, Robert Tonyan kind of group. And so I can understand it happening in this draft because the tight ends don't really fall into a position where there's a no-brainer selection, at least in the first 10 rounds.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But overall, looking back at it, I think it's a, you know, it's a pretty steady draft. I think it's worked out pretty well. So hopefully it takes us on a little bit of a run this season. We'll keep probably talking about it on RotoViz Overtime to see how it's going, but should be a fun one. So let's hope it goes well.
Yeah, and this is a fun team, and I like the guys that we have. I would just ask you before we leave, in terms of these late round running backs, if Darrington Evans had lasted a couple more picks and made it to that slot where we took Gio Bernard, we didn't talk a lot about him, but he hadn't quite got to the range that we were looking at. I would have really liked him in round 15 if he had gotten back to that pick.
Yeah, he's somebody who I've been targeting like that. We had a list there of guys who they are the guys that I'm drafting. You know, we got Lindsay, we got Bernard, we got Penny. Evans is in that list for me as well. A lot of nice values there, you know, when we get to those kind of zero RB candidates. So, yeah, interested in him. Fits that big gap profile as well. You know, Derrick Henry, running back 4 in terms of ADP in this draft, and then you're looking at running back 54. So my one thing with Evans is I don't know if there's a huge amount of standalone value. But with Henry, like maybe Henry, he looks like he's unbreakable the way his body is built. But, you know, at some point, I think these carries are going to catch up with him. And if they do, it's going to give somebody a shot. And I think Evans is first in line for that. So I do like that. Lindsay's probably the guy that I'm most heavily going after. And then Penny's probably the one out of those 4 guys that I have second most off, but targeting all 4 of those guys. And, you know, full disclosure, the other guy that I probably have more ownership than I thought I would have is James Conner, but that's a good bit earlier. Just to touch on that, he never got near us, but I'm just interested in your thoughts. Is he somebody you're targeting at that point, or is he somebody you're avoiding based on the situation in Arizona?
No, I think the 2 picks that you have to be looking to make all the time are Zach Moss and James Conner. I'm not clear on why they're going where they're going. Now, one of the things that we're seeing is that they are creeping up. So drafters are starting to realize that their ADPs don't make sense. Moss goes at the 803 in this draft. And so, you know, just the report that he could take over the offense, I don't even know that that's news exactly. I mean, that's exactly what you would expect. When you say that a second year back, who was drafted because he is a big back with some pass catching ability, probably just a very similar player to David Montgomery. Similar strengths, similar weaknesses. You know, he's going to break some tackles, but then he's not going to really go anywhere. At the same time, there is some value to that at the NFL level. And, you know, Devin Singletary, I also think, is a good pick. I think that the idea that the Bills pass on every play is a theme that is overstated as it relates to what the upside is for these guys in fantasy. And so Moss going earlier and earlier is something I would continue to expect to happen. And then Connor as well. We don't like to chase running backs who have gotten kind of into the middle of their career and have had some injuries, but the lack of willingness really for the Cardinals for the most part to go to Edmonds last year when Kenyon Drake was bad, right? I mean, he scores touchdowns because he kept getting carries from the 1 yard line, but you know, he's not a starting NFL running back. And yet Edmonds was not given the opportunity to go there. Could that change this season? I mean, do you sometimes look back after the year and realize, well, you know, obviously we didn't do it properly. Once you have the chance to go back and look at everything, take accountability, and make new decisions, then sometimes you do go that route. And his pass catching upside does give him some standalone value, but I would think that those guys should be in a more similar range. Now, it may be that the Cardinals are very set on Edmonds, in which case these ADPs make sense, But Connor would appear to have more standalone value than his ADP indicates when you consider that the upside, should anything happen to Edmonds or should Connor win the starting job outright, which is something that we've seen Arizona do, right? I mean, David Johnson goes into the season, he's the guy, he gets hurt, he comes back, he looks terrible. Kenyon Drake is giving them a little bit of a shot in the arm in that season, and they essentially put David Johnson just completely on the bench. And so, you know, is that the most likely scenario? Probably not. But when we're looking at guys who could absolutely crush where they're going, I just don't think that there's as big a gap between James Conner last year, when he's a second, third turn type of pick, to where he is now. And one of the things that we know with these running backs, again, is this idea that your running back in the first couple rounds needs to have that 23 to 27 point upside, or you need to be taking guys when they're less expensive. And so, you know, we're looking at these depth charts, who's undervalued, who, based on the likelihood of the season playing out in a variety of different ways, is not being priced with what his opportunity really is. And so I think that we see Connor as that type of player. Now, we know that we're not going to hit on as many guys in rounds 9, 10, 11 as we would if we picked guys in the first, second, and third rounds. But the relationship of their value to the wide receivers early is such that you have to be very sure that that running back has the fantasy scoring profile that makes him worth that pick.
And that is going to do it for today's show. Hopefully you've enjoyed the entire experience of listening into the three draft episodes and then the recap. It's been a lot of fun to do them. Drafting with Sean Siegel is something of a pleasure. So hopefully you've enjoyed this. This draft for the listeners behind the scenes did come together a little bit last minute, I guess. You know, I kind of had the urge to draft this past weekend, and so I dropped Sean a message to see if he was interested, and we actually got on the clock and got on the, you know, on to record, I would say, a couple of seconds maybe before that round one started. So we obviously know the players we can attend to, like, we have our draft boards and we share them with each other, and we went from there, but pretty rapidly came together. But hopefully you've enjoyed it. I think the team's come out pretty well, like a number of the elements of it. Of course, if you're enjoying the show, drop us a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app. And as always, as a loyal podcast listener, you can get yourself 10% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass. All you have to do is add the code RBRadio2021 at checkout, or go to rotoviz.com/podcast for more information. I'm biased, but I think it's one of the best subscriptions out there to get your teams in shape for your upcoming fantasy seasons. Until we're back with some more shows of the RotoViz Best Ball Show, we will have a couple more of these coming out, I think, to wrap things up between myself and Zach. A couple of episodes left to go through, but hopefully you've enjoyed the couple of drafts we've done. We've done three of them now, between myself and Zach, myself and Sean, and then Sean and Zach. So hopefully you've enjoyed that content, a little bit of an insight into what we're doing while on the draft board. Of course, we'll have more RotoViz Overtime podcast coming up, where you can hear myself and Sean talking as well. So check those out if you haven't already. But of course, until we are back with another edition of the show, or of course, if you're listening to your next episode of RotoViz Radio that you hopefully are going to enjoy, hit that subscribe button, drop us a 5-star review, and until we talk again, have a good one.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.